In the story of Esther, one of the really the highlight of the first couple of chapters is when the title character, Esther, who is a young Jewish girl, all of a sudden finds herself as queen of what is the greatest empire at the time, the Persian Empire. We read this in Esther 2 in verse 17. The king loved Esther more than all the women, and she found favor and kindness with him more than all the virgins, so that he set the royal crown on her head and made her queen instead of Vashti. Then the king gave a great banquet, Esther's banquet, for all his princes and his servants. Also, he made a holiday for the provinces and gave gifts according to the king's bounty. What a day that must have been. Esther is made queen. She gets this beautiful crown given to her. She gets a banquet in her honor. She gets her very own holiday, and everybody's happy, right? Well, I would assume that probably former Queen Vashti wasn't all that happy with all of this going on. But also we notice in verse 17, it says, again, the king loved Esther more than all the women. So we see here that Esther was not the only one that was eligible for the crown at this time. And these three words, all of the women, is representative of actually a very great number of women. We get more of an idea of the competition she was facing in Esther 2 and verse 2. Then the king's attendants who served him said, "Let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king. Let the king appoint overseers in all the provinces of his kingdom, that they may gather every beautiful young virgin to the citadel of Susa, to the harem and to the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who is in charge of the women, and let their cosmetics be given them. Then let the young lady who pleases the king be queen in place of Vashti." And the matter pleased the king, and he did accordingly. Now, I don't know exactly how big the Persian kingdom was at this time, but I assume that it's not a very tiny number of women that's being brought before the king. Now, we certainly might shudder at the idea of being queen of a pagan empire. For us who are men tonight, we certainly would. But, you know, as far as if we're thinking about things from secular terms, you know, it's not a bad position that Esther has found herself in. Obviously, she's had this fanfare, she's had the celebration, and more than once, the king, again, of Persia, looks at her and says, "What is your petition? For it shall be granted to you. And what is your request? Even up to half the kingdom, it shall be done." Now, do you think, thinking about all of these other women who also had a chance to be queen, do you think that maybe, just maybe, that one of them was looking at Esther on the day that she became queen and maybe thought to themselves, "That should have been me"? Or maybe do you think, maybe just one of these women that were being brought before the king or were brought before the queen, the king during all this celebration that was going on for Esther, do you think maybe they thought to themselves, "That should have been for me"? Maybe do you think that just one of these women, as they were sitting at home during this holiday that's going on for Queen Esther, were thinking to themselves, "This should have been mine"? We read again in Esther 2, or we read in Esther 2 in verse 7 that about Esther, the young lady was beautiful of form and face. Do you think maybe just one of these women were sitting there thinking, "I mean, she's okay. I mean, what does she have that I don't? I'm beautiful too. I'm certainly more humble than Queen Esther. I mean, look at the way that she's up there wearing her crown." Have we ever done that? I mean, probably not looking at queens. A lot of us probably haven't, but have we ever, you know, we've looked at someone who's in a similar situation in life than us, but they have something that we just can't help but envy. Maybe they have more money than we do. Maybe they have better health than we do. Maybe they have the job that we always wanted. And we can't help but thinking, you know, they really don't deserve that. And although we may not allow ourselves to say it out loud, and maybe we don't dwell on it too long, even in our own mind, but maybe we can't help but think, "But I do." Certainly we wouldn't argue if whatever that was taken away from them and given to the person who really deserves it. And we probably certainly wouldn't argue if it was given to us instead. But there are a couple of things that I want to read about and point out about Esther. First, we see in Esther 2 in verse 7 that it says, she had no father or mother. And also we see that because of the actions of an evil man by the name of Haman, this occurs in Esther 3 in verse 13. Letters were sent by couriers through all the king's provinces to destroy, to kill, and to annihilate all the Jews, both young and old, women and children, in one day, the 13th day of the 12th month, which is the month Adar, and to seize the possessions as plunder. Whose people is it that this refers to here? It's Esther's. So it is true that Esther, in this point in life, if we're looking at her, I mean, she really does seem to have a whole lot, but does she have everything? Obviously, she doesn't have her parents. She possibly doesn't have safety. We don't know to what extent that this law is going to affect her. The king doesn't know that she is Jewish at this time, but I would assume that it's not going to be very good for her when he finds out. There's a whole lot that she doesn't have. And kind of to put it another way, she does have a whole lot of things. She does have a whole lot of blessings, but what she also has is hardships. And that is the case for every person on this planet. Even for that person that we look at and they have the great job and they have all, you know, the money and the good health. From our perspective, we may look at them and say, you know, they have a perfect life. But I don't think that they would think that. And we know that to be wrong. We know that nobody really and truly has a perfect life here in this earth. Even though someone may have a lot in one aspect, you know, maybe they're not doing okay mentally. Or maybe someone has a lot in another aspect, but maybe they've suffered great loss in their family. Or maybe someone has a lot in this aspect, but maybe they have bad health. Nobody has it all. And that's especially true with non-Christians. Jesus asked this in Mark 8 and verse 36, "For what does it profit a man to gain the whole world and forfeit his soul?" So maybe that person that we're looking at, maybe they do have the best health. Maybe they do have all of the money. Maybe they do have X. Maybe they have Y. Maybe they have a whole lot of extra Z to go along with it. Maybe they're really happy. I doubt it, but maybe they are. Maybe they are all of these things. Maybe they do have the world. But if they don't have Christ, they don't have the most important thing. And that far outweighs the things that they do have. Even if they have the whole world, if they don't have Christ, they have nothing. And that's not really something to be envied. And as we are very much aware, Christians have struggles to go along with blessings in this life too. We see plenty of that within the New Testament, but it's nothing new for righteous in general, as we see throughout the Bible. If somebody did not know anything about Job and then met him sometime after the book of Job, they would look at him and they would see the abundance of camels that he has and the abundance of sheep and the abundance of donkeys. They would see that he has 7 sons and 3 daughters. They would see that no women are found as fair as his daughters. They would see that he is being able to see multiple generations of his grandchildren. And they would look at Job and they would say, man, his life is perfect. Nothing can get better than that. And yet, there is something that Job is also in possession of. He is in possession of the memory of his other sons and daughters dying. And of his sickness. And of his pain that he went through. Every life has blessings. And sometimes a life has blessings in abundance, but it also has struggle. And for the person who would be willing, if they had the chance, to take one of these things away, to take the blessings away. If they were so convinced in their mind that they were the one who is truly deserving of it, and they were able to and took it all away, well, that would be the same person that would also be willing to leave all of the bad stuff with the other person and to just take away the good. Here's a question that you know, it's kind of hard to ask myself. Would I be willing to take both? Would one of these women that were around or who are also competing for the crown the same time as Esther was, would they be willing to take away her queenship and to take away her crown and to take away all the celebration and all of the honor, but also give up their parents? Or also make themselves a target of Haman's law? Would someone who is willing to take away all the blessings from Job, would they also be willing to take on the struggle that he went through in the past? Would someone who looked at the person who owns the whole world, and even if this was the most undeserving person in the world, maybe this is the person whose character, you know, looks and smells like garbage. They're a bad person. They're undeserving. And we look at them and we see that they have the entire world. Would we be willing to take away all that they own, but also willing to take on giving up our soul? If we're not willing to take on both, what would give us the right to take on one? And something that I really need to warn myself about is being insistent on what I deserve. There's another character in the book of Esther that did exactly that. It was a character that we've already mentioned by the name of Haman. And the king of Persia asked Haman something about Esther's cousin Mordecai. He says in Esther 6 and verse 6, "What is to be done for the man whom the king desires to honor?" But the king kind of reserves the fact that he is talking about Mordecai. He doesn't tell Haman that. And this is Haman's answer. He says in verse 7, "For the man whom the king desires to honor, let him bring a royal robe which the king has worn, and the house on which the king and the horse on which the king has ridden, and on whose head a royal crown has been placed, and let the robe and the horse be handed over to one of the king's most noble princes, and let them array the man whom the king desires to honor, and lead him on horseback through the city square, and proclaim before him, 'Thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor.'" Why is it that Haman suggests such a thing? Well, we see this in verse 6, "And Haman said to himself, 'Whom would the king desire to honor more than me?'" Haman is pretty insistent about what he deserves. And what ends up happening? Well, he ends up getting what probably most of us would say that he deserves. We see in Esther 6 and verse 10, "Then the king said to Haman, 'Take quickly the robes and the horse, as you have said, and do so for Mordecai the Jew, who is sitting at the king's gate. Do not fall short in anything of all that you have said.' So Haman took the robe and the horse and arrayed Mordecai and led him on horseback through the city square and proclaimed before him, 'Thus it shall be done to the man whom the king desires to honor.' And then Mordecai returned to the king's gate, but Haman hurried home mourning with his head covered." Maybe if I continue to be insistent about what it is that I deserve, maybe I'll find out what it is that I truly deserve. And what is it that's insinuated by that? If we were to truly think about what it is that we deserve, if we were to sit down and ask ourselves that question, what answer would we come up with? Would we say that we deserve the honor that's given to Mordecai here? And yet we read this in Romans 8 and verse 16, "The Spirit himself testifies with our spirit that we are children of God. And if children, heirs also, heirs of God and fellow heirs with Christ, if indeed we suffer with him, so that we may also be glorified with him. For I consider that the sufferings of this present time are not worthy to be compared with the glory that is to be revealed to us." Through Christ, we have a glory that Mordecai could never even imagine. And I guess the question to ask is, do we deserve that? And what is it, do you think, that God wants us to do with this knowledge? I believe that he does want us to desire to take away from others. Not their stuff, or their health, or their blessings. What about some of that struggle that they're going through? And again, thinking especially about the non-child of God. I mean, think about what was said earlier. Someone who does not have Christ, but has everything in the world, has absolutely nothing. So instead of, desiring to take away everything that they do have, what if we help them to find everything that's worth having? Wouldn't that feel so much better? Maybe not as glamorous, well, in this life, but we get to share glory with them in the next. Paul says this in reference to fellow brothers and sisters in Galatians 6 and verse 2. He says, "Bear one another's wealth away, their health away, their blessings away." No, he says, "Bear one another's burdens, and thereby fulfill the law of Christ." I think so often it's a whole lot easier to feel our burdens than it is to feel our blessings. And as children of God, it really shouldn't be that way, and yet it's something that we struggle with. But if it is that way for us, don't you think maybe it's that way for others? And wouldn't we love it if someone were to help us with those burdens that are so easy to feel? I mentioned Mordecai earlier, and he was a man that was willing to do that. He was a man that was willing to take away from Esther, but this is what he took away. We read in Esther 2 and verse 7, "He was bringing up Hadassah, that is Esther, his uncle's daughter, for she had no father or mother." He took away the burden from Esther of no one being there to raise her. He helped to take away her fear of approaching the king about this law that Haman had made. There's a whole lot of joy that came about because of Mordecai and his willing to take away from Esther, to take away some of the burdens from Esther. Now, some people would be aware of this. A whole lot of people wouldn't be, but I hope that we see it. And I hope that something else that we see is that we have the ability to be Mordecai's in our life too. I think we probably will be very surprised about the change that would occur around us if we desire to take from people, but not their stuff or anything like that, if we honestly desire to take away their burdens instead. It's Christ that makes the great offer to us to take away our great burdens, the burdens of sin, the burdens of iniquity. And if you are ready to accept that offer this evening, please come forward while we stand and as we sing.